Good evening all, it's Monday night and welcome to the Tilt and Talk show. I'm Paul Hipkiss and we're joined by Chris Brown.
Good evening.
Claire Giblin.
Good evening.
Alan Watton.
Good evening.
Not in a robe, Mark Adams.
Hello everyone.
Mark Meredith, sponsored by Ralph Lauren.
Evening all.
Craig Courtney.
Good evening all.
And our very special guest for the night is one of our best captains, certainly over the last 10 years. I'm delighted to say we're joined tonight by Michael Morrison.
Woo!
So, obviously, top of the show, I want to, obviously, I'm sure we all do, wish Tony Mowbray a speedy recovery. He's got to take 6 to 8 weeks out, unfortunately, after a little MOT that he had recently. And I'm sure we all wish him a speedy recovery and all the best. The one thing I was pleased to see was that he can still get involved, you know, whether you want to read into this or not, but it tells me that it's hopefully not that bad, that he can still get involved, you know, on Zoom and whatnot, you know, from his home, hopefully, you know, and still be involved with his staff in the club. He just can't physically be there for 6 to 8 weeks. So hopefully we'll see him make a speedy recovery and be back on the training ground with the lads as soon as possible. But yeah, great result anyway. Last week, obviously 6 points from a possible six and, you know, a great two wins. And we'll start with Blackburn, Claire. Start us off with your thoughts on Blackburn.
Well, I'm going to start off, first of all, saying I hope everything went well today with Lorraine and rest in peace. Definitely. And I hope she had a really good send-off as well. Quite fitting that we won two games in a week with everything that's gone on as well. Thought we played well both games, to be fair. I thought Blackburn, we absolutely annihilated them. They had nothing against us. It was a typical Eustace performance. He went really defensive at 70. Definitely don't miss that anymore. And I think, you know, the relief for when we scored that goal, you could feel it. And I thought it was brilliant. I thought we played really, really well. I thought we were all over them. We just couldn't hit a barn door. And then thankfully on Saturday, we actually learned how to shoot in the period of 3 or 4 days. But we could have beaten them 4-0. We could have beaten them by more. We were playing NFL and rugby league, weren't we, instead of playing football. But yeah, I thought that we played really well. I think both games, I think Sunderland, I think we played well as well. And the atmosphere for Sunderland was electric. It was brilliant in the bars beforehand. It wasn't great trying to get a drink or go to the toilet at half time, mind, but you know, it was full and it made you choke up a little bit when they came out and you just saw everywhere full, even the Gil Merry Copper. And it was just phenomenal. And to get a result as well. I mean, those limbs were exceptional. So fair play. Tilt and Lower especially, you went for it on that point. I think, you know, it's good to see Giselle was playing well. I thought Stansfield was a bit quiet, but he hasn't had the service recently. But I thought Miyoshi was good. And again, I've got to put my hands up. Tyler Roberts, you are shocking me at the moment because you had one of your best games in a Birmingham City shirt. So I don't know what's happened with him, but I think that, you know, we're turning a corner. Hopefully we can play for Tony Mowbray now. If, you know, if you need an incentive, you've got it. So really happy 2 wins in 2. Take that into Saturday, definitely.
That was my daughter's first experience of a sold-out St Andrews. And, you know, like you say, you put a lump in your throat, you know, before kickoff. And just seeing her standing there, taking it all in as a 13-year-old for the first time was unbelievable. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think the last time we sold out, it might have been Fulham at home. And Morrow, I know you played in that, didn't you? Fulham at home. And we had to win that, didn't we, to be safe?
Yeah, I think that was the last game Paul Robinson played. He come on last 10, 15 minutes. We left the grass really long that day. I remember Fulham complaining how long we left the grass because it was baking hot and we didn't want them to pop it round us, so we left the grass really long.
I remember it being a really hot day as well. It was a lovely day and I was lucky enough to be in hospitality that day as well. And I had a beer or 12 that day after we won that and secured our place in the division, I'll say. But Mark Adams, give us your thoughts on Sunderland, mate, as well. So
I thought we deserved to win. I think we, considering they're going for the playoffs or whatever, I thought we more than matched them. I think those top six sides, you know, it's much for muchness. There's not a lot to be scared of, so it kind of gives you a bit of hope for the future. Some of them were tall, they were, you know, like giants, but we popped it around them nicely, and you know, we deserve to win. It's when all of a sudden looking at mid-table, which we've been saying for a few years now, mid-table success.
I think for me on Saturday, Tony Mowbray got the subs absolutely spot on. He brought them on the right side. You know, I know we equalised just before he made them. You know, we did score with Todd Roberts, was obviously involved in the first goal, but then he's took Todd Roberts off and he's brought on Dembele and he's brought on Bakuna as well. And they had a big impact on the game, the pair of them, really, didn't they, Alan?
Well, indeed, yeah. Those two came up, Bakuna particularly, he created both winning goals, didn't he? With almost his first touch. But I tell you what, it struck me during the game and afterwards that I'm almost glad that we went a goal down and we did look, you know, we made a couple of mistakes, but we didn't, the heads didn't go down. In fact, it sort of, got us going. And we, you know, instead of moping, we got stuck in. And from that moment on, from the goal and then the save from Ruddy, you know, the sleeves got rolled up and we got stuck in, and we, you know, they were nothing after that. Bellingham's booking, that helped a great deal because we never saw him again. But the overall, I'm thinking not only did we play very well, but we basically took a step back before we got started, and so the merit of the win was even better. I mean, it was good. To be honest, I thought Blackburn were crap, but Sunderland weren't. I mean, they've sacked the manager today. And I was listening to some of their people, but you know, they've got proper defenders, and they've got, I mean, Clark is a top class player, and you don't want to give him the ball 50 yards from goal and let him run on, but we did, and we got over it, and that speaks volumes to me of the character and the determination of the side, which, let's be honest, has been missing for since October, shall we put it that way. I had a difficult week visiting all these poorly friends of mine, but it was bookended by, I went to the match on the Tuesday, I stayed in Birmingham for the week, and then before I went home, I was at Sunderland, so it was a topsy turvy week for me. But I felt really, really, really good going home. I mean, it was the fastest journey I've ever made from Birmingham to Sussex. I tell you, I was walking up the garden path here, thinking that didn't take long. You know, normally I'm down here, but it was terrific. When that goal went in, the first goal. I haven't heard that noise for a long time. Incredible. Really haven't. It was unbelievable. Mm. I thought the roof was going to cave in. It was fantastic. Really happy.
Mm. I bet it's like no other, isn't it, Morrow, when you're playing a sold out St Andrews and you're walking out onto that pitch before kickoff? You know, it must send shivers down your spine as a player as well.
Yeah, I think the first experience I had of that was Gary Rowett's Watford on the Tuesday night. That was an electric atmosphere. I think we won 3-1 that day. I don't know if Clayton got 2 or 3, but I remember that one being my first home game there, and the taste of it. Yeah, the sound of it. I spoke to Juki. I was actually out with him on Sunday and was saying how electric and how good it must have been at the weekend to see it full, because like you say, it hasn't been. The last time I come, they'd just done the standing and we're just starting to put people into that bit, so it's great to see it back to how it should be.
Yeah, next time you speak to Juki, will you thank him from me for giving Bakuna the ball really quickly to take that free kick to pass it through for Stansfield?
Did he get an assist for that or not?
But yeah, I don't know if you've seen any of the action of us the last week, mate, because I know you was busy beating Carlisle 4-0 on Saturday, weren't you?
Yeah, it was a long trip up to Carlisle, so I did see the highlights on the way back. I watched them a bit, to be fair, and I think the thing that kept coming up on the highlights was Michael Beale ignoring the guy that he'd subbed off. That one kept getting clipped on Instagram rather than the actual game.
Yeah. And Craig, I know you made an appearance on Davo's diary as well, didn't you? On Davo's video.
The back of my head did.
That's the best bit.
The lights were gleaming off it from what I saw. Firstly, you know, just to echo what you said, Paul, I mean, it was the first time that my two daughters have seen St Andrews fall. And I think it makes a difference for the kids. We said it beforehand. We had schools, groups, and tickets donated to various parties that now that they've been down there, not only experienced the full house, but experienced the win. Mm. And for me, it's always better when you win after being behind. That should draw them back. And I think the club they'll know now what they need to do in order to continue that. And I do say, and I hope, really do hope, that they do more of it as we move forwards. The difference for me, I think, on Saturday was, and you've touched on it once, so their heads never dropped. You know, never say die. And even after they conceded the goal, and it was a very sloppy goal to give away, but Roberts could have dropped his head. And he didn't. He actually come back fighting and came close himself to getting the equaliser not long later off that corner.
Yeah.
But we were on the front foot straight after the kickoff, and that was the good thing. That's what we have been missing, and we're seeing more of now. Tuesday night, you know, we played Blackburn off the field, and I haven't, again, if we'd have just had our shooting boots on, then Chris could have been a bit worried about how he was presenting this evening. But unfortunately, he's got away with it again. But I still think it's to come. I still think we can go on the run. And actually, after the Sunderland interview, what the lad that I spoke to actually said, comparison of Birmingham to Sunderland is unreal, because they went on a run of loads of chances of not scoring. Then they went on a run of scoring loads of goals, and they actually spanked a team 6-0 not long later. Chris, it's time to worry, mate.
Yeah, just so you know, Morrow, Chris has promised if we score 6 goals in a game, he's promised to do the show naked the week after.
I think you'll be all right, Chris. I reckon you'll be all right.
Yeah, I do as well.
Damn! So, Mark Meredith, how are you, mate? I know you was obviously... Was it last week, Mardi Gras? You weren't here, was you?
No, I was in New Orleans last week for Mardi Gras, yeah, so just still getting over that. it's good to be able to see, I seen the win Tuesday. I was still in New Orleans. I watched it on the TV. And then I was back home for Saturday's game. But, just echoing everybody else's, I thought Tuesday we were very good. Outplayed Blackburn for 90 minutes. Could have scored a lot more, but was happy with the one. Saturday... I thought it was slow a little bit first half. We were in the game, but I thought it was slow. Obviously, we made the mistake for the goal. But again, as everybody said, we didn't put our heads down. We carried on. And second half, it was nice because it was like back in the old days where you're kicking again, you know, kicking in front of the tilt and the atmosphere's up and the fans are behind you. And to get 2 goals obviously helps everybody and the reaction. I know we always talk about... It's like a zoo in here.
She's not going to like you for that.
Dr. Doolittle.
Getting those 2 goals helps. And we talk about, you know, having the fans something to shout about. And I thought second half they really did. And it just, again, 6 points out of 6 is great for us. And we've got 2 tough games coming up, Ipswich and Southampton. And, you know, 2 teams that are pulling out good results as well, so it'd be good to see now the level we're at against those 2 teams, especially on Saturday going away to Ipswich, because they're a top team this year.
Yeah, definitely. And I think message from me, if anyone from the club's watching this, I think it's absolutely huge, you know, if we can make it happen, the incentive that they did for Sunderland's game.
Yeah.
You know, if they can do that for every single home game for the rest of this season, it's going to make such a difference, isn't it? And I guess Morrow, as a player, you know, when you're playing a sold-out St Andrews compared to what it can be like, obviously, when it's half full, it just makes... It's that extra man on the pitch, more or less, isn't it? It makes such a difference when you're playing, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. And I think people sometimes, you know, you see players here, it's hear them say it all the time, but I think everybody got to experience what it was like over COVID without fans. And then fans coming back in, that's when you really, really appreciate what you were missing. And as a footballer, when you score a goal, you know, when there's no fans in the stadium, it's not the same. And I think COVID had a real effect on players realising, actually, like, you know, you shouldn't take the support that you get for granted.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And when you score a goal when there was no fans in the stadium, now you professional footballers know how us lot feel when we score a goal over, you know, our local club or something, or our club. Yeah.
You could still see everyone running into the corner doing knee slides and stuff, though. That was the only thing that got me.
So let's take it back then, Michael. Let's go back to your... Obviously, I know you was at Charlton, weren't you, before you came to us? And how did the move to Blues come about? I know, obviously, Gary Rowett had just taken over and we'd unfortunately just lost by a heavy margin. I won't say the score, but we'd lost by a heavy margin at home to Bournemouth. And, you know... Gary Rowett came in then the week after that, and we drew 0-0 away at Wolves, didn't we? Did you sign before that game? Did you play in that game?
Yeah, I played in that game. I signed on the Friday night. I'd been in the team at Charlton for pretty regularly for the last few years, and then they changed the manager, and I was out of the team. And obviously, at that time, you could still do loans. You can't do that anymore, so you know it was impossible to happen now. And obviously, Gary had come in, I think, off the back of that 8-1 or 8-0 against Bournemouth. And he was after a centre half. Pretty obviously, you've lost games after a centre half, and I didn't know at the time, but it was between me and Greg Halford. Unfortunately enough, you know, he chose me.
Made the right choice, mate.
we still ended up signing Greg in the end.
I know.
So I ended up going on the Friday training, doing the Wolves game, and it happens so quick. Remember getting told about it like Wednesday, then having to make a decision on the Friday. And to be honest, I was umming and ahhing, you know, is this a good move? Do I stay at Charlton? Because, you know, you've just lost 8-0 the year before that, just stayed up last day of the season, Paul Caddy's goal. So you're thinking, you know, what are you walking into as such? Yeah. But, you know, I've never regretted it once since doing it. It's been fantastic. I still live in the area. I love my time there. But it was so quick how it happened. You get into the game, and sometimes that's brilliant. The game, I think, might have even been on telly on the Saturday or whatever. You just get straight into it. You know, it's a massive game as well. And you probably don't feel the nerves because you haven't had that week to build up. For me, I'm just like, right, full on, let's go. And then we played on the Tuesday and got a good result. And it just snowballed so quickly. The way Gary was able to give everybody so much confidence, you know, it was a miraculous turnaround, really.
Yeah, yeah. What was he like to play for, Gary? Was he kind of like, as soon as you came in, and had you had much dealings with Gary Rowett before you came to Blues?
Never met Gary before. Didn't have a conversation with him before I signed, really. It was just get up to the training ground so you could train Friday and play. There wasn't like a relationship that, you know, I knew someone through someone to get me there. So, you know, I'm really grateful he did bring me there. And I thought he was a really good people person. I think he knew the strengths of the team. You know, obviously we had Paul Robinson at the back at the time, Specs. So we sat off a little bit deeper, but we had people like Damari Gray with, you know, terrific pace. Clayton Donaldson at the time was a real talisman. He could do a bit of both. He was so athletic and strong up front. He really used what talent he had in the team and executed it in the right way to get the strengths out of the team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And with him on that, so Damari Gray on the left and David Cottrell was on the right as well, wasn't he? And that was pretty good for Clayton. Service-wise, he got good service, didn't he, on his own?
Yeah, had really good balance. And, you know, at some point, Andrew Shinney, when I first came in, was on fire as well. He really played a big part when Gary first came in. I just think he was quite, I don't know what the word is, quite straightforward, a lot of clarity in what he wanted to do and the approach of what he wanted to play. And he knew the talents that we had. So, you know, we wanted to get Damari on the ball deep and run. He had Jax McGomer as well that he'd worked with as well that ended up playing so many games and was so athletic and skillful. And then he had, you know, good balance with Cotter on the right and Paddy being able to get past him and push on. Them two linked up really well. And it just blended and worked really, really well when he got hold of the team. And, you know, on what he did with that team, and unfortunately we didn't see the end of what could have been, and I think that's always the question mark with Gary, how far he could have took us.
Yeah, definitely. But with that season you signed, we did go on to finish 10th in the league, which was a massive improvement from obviously the season before, you know, staying up at the last day at Bolton. And then the following season, you know, we went on to finish 10th again with the shirt that Craig's wearing there, you know, with the diagonal strike down. John Terrell came in on loan that season, didn't he? And he was just fantastic.
It's the first time I've experienced a loan player come in and be, okay, he's all right. And then by the end of the season, see that the amount of improvement that he had from when he first started playing to the end. I know he scored that wicked goal against Burnley on one of the first games of the season, great volley. But I think he just improved so much as a player. And I really thought his career was going to really kick on, and it's not quite happened. From that season, you thought, oh, this guy's going to get into the Premier League and go on. It not quite happened for him. He still made a good career, don't get me wrong, but he was really special that year.
Yeah, definitely. Claire, give us some of your good Morrow memories.
Because I got the posters along my wall.
Yeah.
I was absolutely gutted when you weren't offered a new contract. We generally all thought you were going to stay. How did it feel when you were told that you weren't wanted by the club anymore and you weren't going to be given? Because I think you wanted, they offer you a year, but you wanted two or three?
Yeah, at the time, I mean, I played for Gary. It was Gary Monk that was in charge. I'd scored 7 goals that season. I'd been captain, played near enough every game. And I'd always been told, don't worry, everything will be fine. We'll look after you. I think Don was in charge of it at the moment at that time. So I sort of got my head down and just carried on. There was a couple of bits in January that I didn't pursue because I was expecting the club to offer me a good deal at the end of the season. And obviously in that time as well, a lot of players had come in on big wages as well. So, you know, I'm thinking, well, I've been one of the key players. So I feel like my deal was, you know, back when Gary was in charge and there was a cap on, you know, what people were getting paid and stuff. So, I thought I was in line for a bit of a pay rise as well, not only the years. And when they come and said, right, this is the offer, it's a year, take it or leave it, it was a bit of a change to what I'd been told previously building up to that time. So, yeah, I was disappointed. I thought I was valid to ask for a 2-year deal. I'm obviously still playing now. I ended up playing 3 years at Reading in the Championship after that. So I was surprised. I think maybe a little bit I got caught up in Gary Monk and Dong having a bit of a fight because Gary wanted to keep me and was, you know, a big supporter of mine. And I don't know whether some of that came into the fact when them two were obviously, you know, they obviously fell out as well. So it was a bit going on behind that. So yeah, it was frustrating for me. And if I'd have took that year, it was actually COVID the following year. So it had made it even more difficult the following bit. So, you know, when I look about it for my family, you know, it was a good decision to turn it down. Obviously a really difficult one. And like, I've moved back to the area, you know, I feel really at home at Birmingham. And, you know, I live in Solihull and love it up here. So it was a really difficult one to then go and move somewhere else. But it's just one of them things that happen at football. It's timing. And it was quite frustrating afterwards to see quite a few lads then get 2 or 3 year deals later on that, you know, within 6 or 7 weeks. I was like, well, why didn't I get that? You know, I felt like I'd been a good servant to the football club. I didn't feel like I was asking for too much. And, you know, I felt like I'd sort of got caught out of the club. And then, you know, people like Harley Dean and Maxim Collin, you know, all good players, end up getting new contracts. And I was like, oh, where was mine?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Chris, we got any good early questions coming in for Michael at all?
There was a couple, quite a bit. You should have got a longer deal. The expensive Redknapp players contract meant there was no equal parity with some of the players we had already had, says our friend Bick. And I've gone past all the ones about Morrow, sorry. So what do you feel you did walk into Morrow? Great group of lads, was it? Says Benji.
When I first walked in, yeah, I mean, it was a good English group. I'd been at Charlton and we'd had some troubles at the time. The new owner had come in and we were getting, you know, lads from all over the world coming in from there. It was Deutschland, he owned 6 clubs, and so every week a new player would come in and we'd never know who he was. So it was nice to, you know, actually recognise and know a few of the players. It was a hard working, you know, old school values in that team, and it had some real quality as well. And I say off the pitch, I think quite a few lads still speak to each other, and there was a good set of people, and that can go a long way, especially in the Championship.
Definitely. Alan, you got anything to ask Michael yourself?
Yeah, I was very interested in what you said about your leaving and about other players who were given longer contracts. Now, you had another... You didn't stay at Birmingham, but you went to Reading, and you probably had the cash you were looking for or whatever, and had a good 3 or 4 years there. So you had another career after you left Birmingham. And some of the people you've named who stayed, you know, were offered contracts around the 29-30 mark. By the time they got their 3 years in, you're thinking, well, we should have got rid of those. Not because they were bad players, but because their time... They hadn't got any value left. If they'd left, they'd have gone into the second and third Division 2 or 3. Sorry, 1 or 2. And had another career. And it was ironic that we saw you and Harley Dean in opposition a few months ago on the telly. I sat there thinking, oh, look who's here, you know. And immediately I thought of your situation and his. Now, he was given a longer contract at the age of about 29. But by the time he got to the middle of that contract, people wanted him out the side and we couldn't get rid of him because he was on too much money. But then he went on loan and then he came back and did okay then. But what I'm saying is, I mean, for you personally, it probably worked out okay in the end, didn't it? I mean, I wouldn't have got rid of you either. But you did go and you did have a good time, a good career at Reading and moved on. Well, you came as you are now?
Yeah, full circle now. So,
You're still going. Other players have gone. Some of the ones that are still there, you're thinking, well, really, you know, we should have said goodbye for their sake as well. You know, yes, you're going to get a decent contract at the age of 32 that you're not going to get for Birmingham. So maybe we should have moved you out when you've still got some legs. Basically, that's what I'm trying to say. And I think it worked out okay for you.
I think my priority at the time, I was 31. I'd played every game. You know, I thought a 2-year deal was viable. You know, before you even start talking about money, the fact that it was only a year, puts, you know, you're in the same 6 months later, you're thinking, well, what am I going to be doing? And actually, I had a fantastic time at Reading. You know, I really feel bad for what's happening at that football club at the moment, and they definitely don't deserve it. The fan base with me was exceptional. And, you know, and I had a really good time. We just missed out on the playoffs. When I was there, got to play with Michael Elise, John Swift, that's at West Brom, great player. You know, some really good players, Lucas Yao, Yaku Mate. So we had a really, really strong team. Omar Richards, who's in the Premier League as well now. So we had a really strong team. So I felt, you know, when I got there and, you know, I enjoyed my time there. But yeah, I feel like it was cut short a little bit at Birmingham. And I think most people, which is nice to hear when I speak to people, most people agree with that. Maybe if I'd have stayed a year longer, they'd have been like, right, we've had enough of him. So,
well, yeah. And some of the people you've talked about, they've had those two and a half years and their legs haven't taken them through it, basically, because it suddenly catches up. So maybe you did the right thing.
You're 5 years at the club as well, Murray. You had played for five managers, didn't you? You had Gary Rowett, and then you had obviously Gianfranco Zola, and then Harry Redknapp, and then Steve Cottrell, and then after Steve Cottrell was obviously Gary Monk. And for me, you know, those out of those five managers, obviously, I guess they were all, well, how can I put it, very different from one another. I'll put it politely.
Yeah, I think it was sort of around. Started good and finished good. I think that's how I'd put it. I actually really enjoyed Harry. I got on with him really well. I thought he come in and obviously did a great job when he first come in. He was very honest. Said, listen, I don't watch a lot of Championship football. I don't know who everyone is. He obviously knew who Craig was at the time, Craig Gardner. But other than that, and Kushat, the goalkeeper. But other than that, he didn't have a good working knowledge of who we were. But he did bring in Steve, and Steve was very knowledgeable about the league, about the standard of football, what needed to be done. And Harry was so good at just having that demeanour, being relaxed, being calm. I really liked Harry, and a shame it didn't really work out. And I think at the time, the club just wasn't aligned. You know, when you think about that summer, he was talking about signing Ashley Cole, Robbie Keane, and then he ends up with three lads from Brentford and a lad from Barnsley. No disrespect to any of them, but when I think about Harry Redknapp and he's talking about Ashley Cole and Robbie Keane, that's not what he's expecting to get served up. And I think that was a little bit of the alignment from the recruitment back when Gianfranco was in charge. And it kind of, we threw money at it, and you have to get it right when you do it. Otherwise, it doesn't work, and it puts you in a bad spot. As we had, you know, when I was here under Gary Monk, we had the point deduction.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mark Meredith, was you at the club when Morrow first signed? It was 2014. You moved over there, didn't you, to Dallas?
Oh, yeah. I think Michael had just joined Blues when I moved here. I would say you on loan 2014, right, Michael?
Yeah, that must be about right. God, it seems a long time away now. You said that.
I think the only ever time I watched you play is obviously on TV here. So I moved over here to coach in 2014. So yeah, I'd watched it. But my question to you was, obviously, you just talked about Cambridge and you started there. Now you're back there. Was that something that you, when you moved to Cambridge, was that something you planned to go back to where you started? And is that going to be, do you think that'll be the end of your rest of your career now? And were you going to coaching and stuff after?
Yeah, it's very difficult to say whether, you know, it's planned in football. You can never plan anything. But I had the opportunity. I was at Portsmouth and I was still playing. I was in the team. We weren't doing very well at the time. And I knew the manager at Cambridge for when I was first there, when I was at Academy, when I was 17, he was part of the Academy set up. And I'd always kept in touch with him. So when I had the opportunity, I couldn't really turn it down. It was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to help. I thought I could help. We ended up staying on the last day of the season. It was, you know, for me, when I think about it, you know, I had friends that come and watch me at 17 when I was 17. And now I've got friends, I'm 35. I've got friends that bring their kids to the game. You know, my mum and dad live 20, 30 minutes away. So on a Friday night, I stay at their house. You know, and they get to see me every week. I get to spend time with family as well. We go down at half term. So for it encompass the whole thing, when you're 35 and you're my age and you play and you want to play for a purpose, you want to play for something that you really love and it fits with your family as well. And I think that whole package that I had, you know, I couldn't turn down. And that's probably why, you know, my time at Portsmouth got cut short as well, because, you know, I couldn't miss this opportunity. When I was at Portsmouth, I was travelling down, up and down from Solihull. I was missing a bit of my family as well. So it was a great all-round package to go there. And I suppose when you say, you know, to finish the second part, is that the end of my career there? Hopefully I can play as long as I can. And, you know, you hope that afterwards there might be a role within the football club, because I would have been there and seen it and played a lot, you know, a lot of times. I'm nearly up to just over 150 games there playing for Cambridge. So yeah, it would be a nice round circle. But again, if I still feel like I can play, it's the best job in the world. So I want to try and get as much out of my career as possible. You're a long time retired, so a lot of my friends keep telling me.
Sorry, Paul.
I was going to ask Michael, did you ever get the opportunity to play abroad, or would you have took it?
Yeah, do you know what? It's something that me and my wife have talked about a lot. I had a couple of opportunities when I was at Blues just before my contract was finishing. I had an offer to go to Montreal and Vancouver, which we thought about, but actually my wife was pregnant in the May, and the length of the contract was only a year, so that would have been 6 months from the end of mine, so it didn't quite work out, that one. I think I've been offered, just before I signed for Blues, I'd been asked to go to Hungary, which I didn't take, didn't fancy that one. And I think the most bizarre one, I'd been offered to go to Azerbaijan once, but wow. I mean, the wife, when I was talking about going abroad, I'm not sure that's what she was thinking of.
There's a lot of love coming in for you on the shout box as well, Michael. So Paul Toot says, Michael, good honest professional who never let us down. Is it Tom Richardson's asking, is it true Morrow went on a lads holiday to Amsterdam with Kuyvesbald, and any good stories you can tell us from that trip?
I'm not sure I can tell any stories, but it is true. Me and Dukey, the year that we stayed up against Bristol City, we went over to Amsterdam with Michael, met him, and then this year I went back over and see Keith again as well. He's over back in Holland playing, and we went over in the summer and see him as well. But not too many shit stories that I can share, though.
Yeah, Robo tells me he likes his Dutch house music as well, did he, Keith?
Keith loves a night out. He's good value. When he first came to the club, he couldn't speak any English, and the lads took him out into Birmingham for a night out, and he just kept doing the 1-2-3 and then doing, you know, like rock, paper, scissors for shots. Couldn't speak any English, was just out doing rock, paper, scissors and having shots with the lads. He's a top boy.
Jason Hughes is saying, they say never go back, but so I know you've sort of alluded to this anyway slightly, but What was it like going back to a club you left almost 20 years before, and had it actually changed much at Cambridge United when you went back there from when you was first there?
Well, yeah, from when I was first there, we were non-league. We'd meet at the stadium, we'd train round at the park. I remember one time a dog had come by the drinks bottles and pissed on the drinks bottles. I'd gone from that level. And now when I've come back, we're back in the Football League. They've just built a new training ground. There's some real development. They bought the stadium back that they had to sell when we went into administration and got relegated. So the club's come on so much. So he's been able to see, you know, from night and day, really, and then been able to support and help and, you know, implement some ideas that I've seen off the pitch as well as captain. You know, it's been brilliant to go and help and support a club that, you know, that I owe so much to as a kid.
Well, that's good. Ray Hobro, good question from Ray Hobro. So after playing a home game on a Saturday, what's a typical Saturday evening consist of for you?
Well, I normally travel back, so I'll travel back, get home, put the kids to bed, and bottle of wine and a film, really, on a Saturday night. If the results have gone well, I'll watch some of the ITV, you know, they do the Football League highlights, I'll watch some of that, but if not, I'll ignore the highlights.
How many times did you watch the Mauro Donna goal that you scored then?
I got asked the other day, when was the last time you Googled yourself? And I think I'd done it about 20 times after the Shrewsbury goal.
People saying. And what about when you was at Blues, mate? When you lived there, obviously, I presume you lived there when you was at Blues as well. And what about the Saturday night after you played and you was only a sort of road?
Do you know what? It's always difficult, really. I suppose out with your missus, or like, I've always, you know, since I was at Birmingham, my first child, my first child was only 6 months or just over a year when we first moved. So it's always difficult for childcare and stuff to get somebody to look after a small baby. So you wait for your parents to go up. But I don't live too far from the farm, so I do like a pint down there.
Yeah, good shape. So, Claire, you've got some quickfire questions, I believe, for Michael.
Yeah, let me just find them. Hold on.
While Claire's finding that, Terry Zulu Dempsey has said, Mauro, do you think you could ever join Solihull in the conference and help him out maybe towards the end of your career?
It's a good shout, isn't it?
It's not a bad shout. It'd be local. It's a bit closer to me. Yeah, I mean, they're doing really well this season. So, you know, I do follow them a little bit because I know Craig Cope, who was the sporting director before. He's not now. And I got to meet the owner and went to a couple of games and stuff not too long ago. So, yeah, I mean, they're doing exceptionally well. Never rule anything out. But I am enjoying myself at Cambridge.
Yeah, I know Wingy pretty well, the manager at Solihull Moors as well. Even though he supports them up the road, he's a great guy. So, For one of the opposite fans, he's a decent bloke, Wingy, as well, and he's doing a really good job there, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, Robe, have you got Mauro on your bedroom wall as well as Claire?
No. I'm good friend material, if ever you're interested, Michael. I haven't got many mates. No, actually, Mauro, talking of your goals for Blues, what was your favourite one? Do you remember?
I don't know. Yeah, I'd probably say Sheffield United just because it was my last one at home. It was the last time I scored there, so I'd probably say that. I did lose my man not too long ago, not too long after that, and they scored and it was my man. But I think it was Derby or Sheffield United was my last home goal. So either one of them, really.
Interesting question from Graham Haynes coming in. How did Mauro find the second City Derby? What was it like? I don't know, you played in the one, and sadly the guy's not with us anymore. You know, our fan that ran on the pitch and went up to Jack Grealish. He sadly passed away over the last sort of 12, 18 months. So, but what was it like being on the pitch when that happened as well as a player?
Yeah, I suppose the home one that I remember in my mind, the biggest home one was probably when John Terry was the other captain for Aston Villa. You know, that was quite, you know, you're looking across, you're going, right, we want to win this. Then, you know, it was the first time they started doing all the pyrotechnics over the stadium. And I think, how hot is that? So I was walking out and it was electric atmosphere, and you look around, you got John Terry, who you'd watched on TV, that was, you know, obviously been England captain and stuff. So that was a big one. And then the time when we we nearly beat him and Tim Sherwood was the manager. I thought we were going to do that. I thought we were brilliant for 45 minutes and we had him on the ropes. And sometimes away from home, you feel, you know, you can feel the intensity a little bit more and you think, right, we've got him here. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be. But I think they're the two games that I remember. And then obviously the Jack Grealish moment, which, to be honest, I was sort of standing towards the side and he ran on and you just think, right, he's just going to run past you. You know, and you didn't think any of that was going to happen. And the Aston Villa players were looking at us going, you know, what are you doing? And we were like, well, it's not our fault. You know, we wouldn't have let that happen. And it was a little bit embarrassing as a player because, you know, everybody should feel safe on the football pitch, you know. And I don't think it was a good moment for anybody to, you know, at Birmingham for that to happen. And as it goes, Jack scored the winning goal, I think, in that game. But he was useless for that first half. I think it was a bit disappointing for everybody, not just, you know, not just for that fan.
No, problem.
Go on, Alan.
Yeah, problem was that was nobody dared tackle him after that.
No.
No.
Yeah, he'd been kicking lumps out of him up until that moment.
Yeah, Kiftenbell's tackle, first few seconds.
Kiftenbell in the first minute was like, welcome to St Andrews.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so the one with John Terry, all I remember about that one was us all throwing clappers on the pitch. There's just loads of clappers going on the pitch, but they've been turned into paper aeroplanes.
Yeah.
I just remember the one there when Digger scored that winner and he ran across the pitch. I remember that one. That was pretty amazing. Gary Gardner had scored for Villa at that one.
Yeah. Claire, you got the quick fire questions there?
Yeah, I do now.
Is that long enough to prepare?
Yeah. I'm literally in that A going, which one should I do? Okay. Did you have to perform an initiation song for the
Blues? I did. I think we were away against Blackpool. I did Stand By Me. Easy one. I've done that since I was 18 at all the clubs that I've done Stand By Me.
The floor is yours, mate. The floor is yours. We're all here.
No charge you get me to do that now. I hate it. I'm so against these initiations. They still go on and I still cringe every time.
Who's the best manager you played under?
Lots of different ones for different reasons. The person that I'll probably go for is probably Chris Powell. I played with him when I was 20, and then he was my coach, and then he signed me at Charlton. So for about 8 years of my, or 6 or 7 years of my first professional career after Cambridge, he was a massive influence to me. He's somebody I still speak to every now and then. So I'd probably say Chris Powell.
Who's your funniest teammate at the Blues?
I'd probably say Keith DeBell. I loved him. He was such a good guy. You know, he had to get through so much. You know, he was so happy to mingle with everybody, good for a night out, always wanting to go for a coffee. Maybe not the funniest sometimes when he meant to be funny, but yeah, I'd say Keith. I love spending time with Keith.
If you weren't a footballer, what would you have been?
Oh, I don't know, because I want to stay in football when I finish. I love football. I feel so lucky to play, but I don't know what I'd have done. Both my brothers are teachers, so maybe I'd have gone down that route.
Nah, it's a rubbish thing to do.
That's what they both say.
Don't do it. Who's the best player you've ever played against?
Do you know what? I mean, Clint Dempsey made me look really stupid away at Fulham quite a few times. He's somebody that sticks in my mind. Jamie Vardy's ran me a few times. And then I was lucky enough to play against Harry Kane last year, so I'd probably go for Harry Kane.
And who's the best player you played with?
I would probably go to say Michael Elise that's at Crystal Palace now. I think he'll go on again. I think eventually he'll be a top talent at one of the best teams in the country or the world.
I was waiting for you to say Cheick Ndoye.
No, he did make my team as well. You'll be surprised.
Oh, come on.
Really?
Ndoye, remember him? He used to pass the ball sideways and never forwards and was really slow.
Well, I didn't want to shout at him. He was about 6'8" and massive.
That's a beast.
Carry on, Claire.
What's your best goal apart from the, you know, the one that you scored the other week?
I'd probably say Bristol City as well. We beat them 2-0 at a time, and again, like, I'd sort of nicked the ball on the halfway line, beat a man, passed it, got it back, and sort of dinked it over the goalkeeper. I say dink, people say it took a deflection, but it was a good finish. It was a good run. It was a good mazy run. So probably that goal.
If you had to choose a five-a-side team without you in it, who would you choose?
Ooh, what that I've played with at Blues?
That you played with, yeah.
At Blues or in my career?
Do one with Blues and one with career. Let's see if it's different.
So I go Keefton, Bell, Djukovic in a five-a-side team. Not that they're technically the best players. We'd be probably better if we can tackle and clip it onto Juki's head. Them two would definitely be in it. Tommy Cusack in goal. Tommy, I really like Tommy. I thought he did well. I thought in his time he did well. Shea Adams, and yeah, he's a prolific goal scorer, still doing it at a great level. Really liked him, and probably Jax McGoma, bit of trickery in there.
We With Che Adams, you know, his high scoring season before Gary Monk and James Beattie came in was 7 goals, and suddenly as soon as they came in, bang, you know, he's got over 20 goals. And what was the biggest difference there? Do you think what actually brought that out of him?
Yeah, I think the back end of the year before they came in under Harry, he really got some confidence off the back of Harry, really believing in him. And then he was actually in and out of the team at the beginning of that season, if you remember. I think Omar Bogle started in front of him at Leeds, and then Che come on and scored in that game. And I think a lot of credit goes to James Beattie. You know, I think Che was thinking, I've got to drop in, I've got to judge my game on how I link the play. And I think Beats just sort of got into him. He's like, you're a striker, you've got to score goals. And then just his mindset about, right, that's how I'm going to judge myself. I'm going to score goals. I'm going to get in the box. That's going to be the thing that makes a difference. And to be fair to Beats, he's done it with a few different players now. The lad at Wigan, Will Keane, he scored a lot of goals with James Beattie helping. And I think he just came in and just said, prioritise, like, you know, your numbers, getting goals, making sure you're in the box. Yes, it's nice to do all the linking work, but people want to see you score goals when you play up front. And I think that was the biggest thing that got installed in him.
Yeah, yeah. That partnership with Djukovic that season was scary, wasn't it? What a number.
Yeah, it was deadly, yeah.
Really good, yeah. Sorry, Claire. And sorry, the rest of the question that Claire asked was the five-a-side team for your whole career as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, so in goal, Ben Hamer. I got promoted with him at Charlton. He's playing at Watford now. Really good goalkeeper. Played in the Premier League for Leicester. Andy King. He played all the way through for their League One League Championship and won the Premier League. Michael Elise, that's now at Crystal Palace. Who else would be in that team? I'd include Jude, but I never got to play with him. I missed out on that one. Trying to think who else would get in that team. Lucas Yao and John Swift. Did I say John Swift? Lucas Yao, he was a good striker. It was hard work. He would never run around, but some of the skills he could do, he should have played in the Premier League, that geezer, but he had some unbelievable skill. He was just trying to get him to try. Was the hardest task.
Yeah. And Claire, any more?
I've got one from the shout box, which is, what advice would you give to a youngster now if they wanted to make it as a footballer?
I mean, nothing that they haven't ever heard before. I think it's just staying really, you know, not getting too high and not too low. When you have special moments and things go well, that's brilliant. But, you know, not getting too carried away. And equally, you're gonna have times when it's difficult, and not getting too down in the dumps. So the most level you can stay is the best for your development, the best for everything, really. You know, when you look at Instagram, it's either you're brilliant or you're rubbish, when actually it's trying to keep in the middle of, like, you know, not getting ahead of yourself or not getting too down and beating yourself up.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll come on to squad number game now, Craig, if you don't mind. Have you got that?
I have indeed.
What we do tomorrow, we've got Craig gets a season and he tells us a number. It's usually more than one as well, to rack our brains even worse. And we've got to try and guess what players wore those numbers that season. And whenever we get a special guest, obviously accidentally on purpose, it's always a season that special guest played for us as well, obviously.
Yeah. I'm so bad at remembering games, so I'm glad no one's asked me to remember too many games. I'm awful at people. I remember that one. I'm like, no, I can't remember that one.
Well, the season I've chosen is actually 2015-2016. Okay. So it is the season of the kit I am wearing, but I'm after a couple of numbers. In terms of squad numbers. So I think one of them will be pretty easy, and then there'll be a test on a couple of the others. So I'll start off with number 7, which I can say was worn twice during that particular season. The second squad number, which I think it'll be a little bit harder, but it's number 25, and again, was worn twice that particular season. And then finally, number 44 for that season. So it's number 7, number 25, and number 44.
Are we going to see if Morrow can get him and then help him out if he's struggling?
Yeah. No pressure.
Is the 7 David Cottrell? Did he play twice that year? No,
it was 11, wasn't it?
It was 11.
Yeah.
Can I play this week, Craig?
No.
No, you bar, Mr. Meredith, you're too good at it.
Let's give Morrow you're unbelievable at this, Mark. You honestly, it's unbelievable.
I know the 2-7s.
Yeah, do you?
Fry?
No, that was the it was before he signed, wasn't it? It was the season before. Because Fry signed under Zola, didn't they? This was Gary Rowett's full season, when it was the season that John Terrell had obviously come in on loan and did a great job for us.
Do you know what? I'm not going to get that.
No?
Not Mark Duffy, was it?
No. What about Fabbrini?
Somebody just said
Fabbrini was one of the number sevens.
Go on!
Well done.
Damari Gray was the second number seven, yep.
Who?
Damari Gray.
Timmy Gray.
Damari Gray. Blues out.
Who? It's not when we make a sub, isn't it? I bet that was funny, weren't it? Morrow playing when that happened. Who? when the opposition makes a sub and all the Blues fans are going like, who?
Was that? Yeah. To be fair, Fabbrini was such a good talent. I can't believe, like, his loan that year was unbelievable, and then it just never really went for him after that, did it?
No, unfortunately not, because he did have a lot of ability.
Yeah, a lot.
I can say the number 25s, by the way, one of them was a defender, the other was a forward.
Kyle Lafferty.
You pack it in. Kyle Lafferty was the forward at number 25. And the number 44 was also a forward.
Was that Will Buckley?
Brock Madsen. He's just retired, Brock Madsen, huh?
Brock.
Has he? Brock Madsen, number 44?
Yeah.
So all you're missing now is one number 25 who was a defender.
Jane Landry.
Chris, he's barred. He's barred.
Who? That was Chris.
Who was it?
Mark, sorry.
Jane Landry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
over in Doha or Qatar now, I think. I see him on his Instagram. He's over somewhere.
Shane Lowry, yeah.
Okay, Lowry.
Yeah. I never would have got that. We sat here till this time next week.
No. He was Australian, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was indeed.
Yeah.
He still is, then, Mark, if he was.
He's from Azerbaijan now.
Yeah. And Morrow, we asked you to pick your... did we get all them, sorry? Is that done now, Craig?
You did indeed. You got all of them.
And well done to everybody in the Shoutbox that got them as well. Quite a few people in the
Shoutbox was pretty busy.
Very good.
Let's do the who next, actually, before we come on to Morrow's 1 to 11. So what we do now, Morrow, we play a clip of someone speaking that's played with you during your time at Blues, and we want you to tell us who it is.
Right, okay. Just one moment.
My memory, this is.
Never forget.
I did too many balls. That's my problem.
Not that.
This is when I throw him under the bus now. And you're playing his wonder goal then.
Sorry, I haven't got it up for some reason. It's not up. No.
Okay. Do you want to find that, Chris?
I'll find that for some reason.
We asked you to pick your 1 to 11, didn't we, Morrow, from your 5 years with us, the players you played with, and obviously you couldn't pick yourself. I guess straight away you would have been the captain, but. You know, just to make it more fun, we never ask the players to pick themselves. So off you go. Tell us what formation you play.
I went just classic 4-4-2. I was thinking about playing a 10, but the strikers that I had, I needed to put both of them in. So I just went for 4-4-2, kept it simple. Probably not allowed to do that these days, are you? You've got to play 4-2-3-1 or a 3-4-3 with a box or whatever. But I went 4-4-2. I had the choice. My goalkeeper, I went Tommy Cusack. The reason why I went for it is Tommy, I probably played in goal. He probably played in goal the most. And I just remember one time against Derby at home, he made this save. It come off me, flipped off me, and he got across the goal. I've never seen somebody do it so well. And he flipped it around the corner. It was such a fantastic save. I mean, he couldn't kick the ball to save his life, to be fair to him. But he could shot stop on a Saturday because he never bothered in training. But on a Saturday, he was unbelievable. I really liked Tommy. I had a bit of time for him. I could have gone for Darren Randolph. I was with him for a little while. He was a special goalkeeper, went on to have a good career at West Ham. And
he was good. Was that the game, Morrow? Was that the game when Roy the photographer fell backwards? Do you remember that? He was coming out for the game and Roy the photographer.
I can't remember. It was really early one. I think it was the first game of the season. Second game of the season.
Roy, an absolute legend, any of the club photographer. Yeah. He fell backwards. Do you remember that when he fell backwards?
I can't remember that. No, God. But they were the two. Or Campy. I really like Campy. He was a good guy. My right back, know Paul Caddis. I think most people would say if you got to play with him, he's a club legend. He was, you know, when I was talking about, you know, how I ended up here, one of them moments, them sliding door moments, if you hadn't scored, then, you know, Birmingham aren't in the championship and you don't know what would have happened. So, yeah, Paul Caddis, right side.
Was that tough between Maxime, a right back?
Yeah, I'm actually going to see Max in France when our season finishes, the week after they're playing Rennes. So I'm actually going over there. His wife and my wife get on really well. So Max was definitely up there. And, you know, he Matt games he played, he was so reliable. But you can't beat Paul Caddis, can you? You know, just for that. No. For that.
Yeah.
So Max then watching, but you won't be invited anymore.
he won't watch it, hopefully, yeah. Centre half, I went Paul Robinson, and now I appreciate him even more. I'm 35, going to be 36. When I played with him, he was 38 in the championship, playing most weeks. Unbelievable character, brilliant around the training ground. Really showed me how to be a captain. Was really good with that because it could have been a little bit needly, I suppose, as I come in. You know, I got made captain and he was club captain, but he was so good with me. Really helped, showed me what to do off the pitch with such a big club. And I really, really appreciate that. Someone I still keep in touch with, and somebody that, you know, I want to try and see if I can beat his, you know, he got to his 38, I think it was. So, you know, can I beat that, albeit not at the same level, but.
That's a good, Morrow, that's a good segue to our captain's night on the 7th of March in so-called studios in Acots Green, on behalf of EA Promotions. I look forward to hosting that myself as well. So that'll be a good night.
Yeah, it should be a good evening.
Tickets are still available, everybody, as well, I believe, aren't they, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Yep. So, get your tickets for that.
And then I went with... I had the choice out of Harley Dean or Ryan Shotton, and I went Harley Dean. And Harley was a really good player, really helped me as we got a connection. It took us a little while to get connected because when they first come in, they'd sign Mark Roberts, they'd sign Harley Dean, and they'd sign myself. So all three of us were fighting for these two positions. And it was really difficult at the time. I was in the team, I was out of the team, Harley was in the team and out of the team, and eventually we connected, me and Harley, and I think we put especially under Gary Mutt, put a really solid, you know, pairing together. I liked playing with Ryan Shotton as well, but I went for Harley Dean. I probably ended up playing with him more. Shots was really difficult to play with. He was so laid back, you know, trying to get him to do stuff could be quite difficult, but he was such a good player. He probably made it harder for me because you're going, well, don't kick it down in his channel because he's 6'2" and massive and can run. So I ended up having to do a lot more work when I played with Ryan Shotton. So I've gone Harley Dean and Robbo at centre half. Left back went Christian Pedersen. Christian, real athlete, 6', strong, could do everything, could get forward. So I went with Christian. Could have gone with Brownsy, but he went off and played, I think Graham's played over 150 games, but, you know, ended up playing so many games for the club, really reliable. But I went Christian, and then my two midfielders, I went for some legs in there. I went Digger and Michael Keegan Bell. Both of them, you know, they are what they are on the tin. You know what you're going to get out of them. You want to be in the trenches with a pair of them. Probably more talented footballers than they were giving credit for, but I love playing with both of them. They're really honest, they always played. And then every manager always went, right, I'm going to try and evolve the team a little bit and not play them. And then as soon as we lost a few, but right, get them back in, back to basics. I really liked the pair of them. I thought they were brilliant. I thought they were really good players. A couple of technicians that I could have gone for Gleeson or Teshi. I really liked Teshi. We didn't see enough of him. I was gutted that we didn't keep him that year after we had him on loan from Forest. I thought we were going to keep him for a bit longer and wasn't able to. I went for Digger and Keithden Beld, and then I've got Damari Gray on my right wing. He was electric. He was probably, you know, I could see the talent that he had straight away. I remember we played Preston away and he absolutely I can't remember who the player was, he tore him apart and just couldn't score, and you're like, once this kid starts scoring, he's going to go to the top. And obviously he ended up going to Leicester. I think he's in Saudi Arabia now. I don't think he'd be few quid. I could have got David Cottrell, but I think, I wanted to go for Damari. I went Mags on the left wing, Jax Magoma. One of the years, I think he got player of the season when I was there. Like, he was so tricky. He could carry the ball so well, especially when we were playing counter-attack, where he could get you out, you know, away from home. He could bring you up the pitch so well. So I went with him. And then I suppose up front, this was my tricky part. I could have gone for a 10. If I'd have gone for a 10, I'd have gone John Terrell. You know, I think that season he was amazing that year, and unfortunately he's not reproduced that again. But that year he was in a really good place, and you know, I think he scored over 10 goals for us on loan, first loan as well. So he was it. But I went Clayton Donaldson and Juki. I went Clayton because when I first got the club, he was unplayable. The times the ball would go into him, how hard he used to work for everybody. I think he was a real throwback. I really like Clayton. And then I went with Juki. He's been at the club for however long. So lucky to play with him. Top guy, top professional. And he scored the most headers of anybody in the Football League. And then I suppose the one that misses out is Shea Adams. You know, and he was unplayable that year. Him and Juki were up front. But I had to find a space for Clayton and Juki up front together.
Some other good players as well you played with. I mean, Gary Gardner that season under Gary Monk came close to winning player of the season, didn't he, as well? When Shea Adams obviously got it with all these goals. And I thought Hutter had a decent season that season as well. He got about 14 assists and 6 or 7 goals.
Yeah, I really liked Hutter. I think it took him a while to find his feet here. And I think some of the price tag and some of the stuff about his wages didn't help him. I think if you looked at him from just a player point of view, you know, he really affected games and was really good. But I think because everybody was like, he's supposed to be on this, he's supposed to be doing this, we all probably wanted a little bit more from him.
Yeah.
But really, really calm guy, really, really talented footballer, no doubt.
Yeah.
Just on Juki, Michael, is that the hardest type of striker to defend? Obviously, you being a centre-half, is that the big, strong guys in the air, is that the hard ones to defend?
No, nowadays it's the fast, quick ones, the small, quick ones. They're the ones that cause me the most problems now. But yeah, Juki's. There's not too many like that anymore, so it is difficult to play against them. And certainly when, you know, I'm playing with Lyle Taylor at the moment, when, you know, that sort of striker that backs into you, that makes it really difficult, it really helps the team. I think you don't appreciate that type of player until they're in your team. You're like, God, how much work he does for us, how he helps us get out of our half. Yeah, he does a lot of unsung work.
Yeah. Jason Hughes, with Duke and Donaldson in the team, we wouldn't need a midfield. They would never.
No, it'd be going over the top of them, and Duke, and then Digger and Keith and Bell would be on the seconds.
Question for Morrow from Mike Hill. So I think the introduction of women refs is good for the game. What is your view?
Yeah, we've had a few. I think I had the female ref last year that refed in the Premier League. She actually gave a penalty against me that I didn't think was a penalty. But yeah, I think, you know, I've got girls myself. I want to encourage them to go to football and be part of it. And, you know, I think all that stuff that everybody's doing within the game and externally from the game, all the promotion, commercial stuff, I think is vital to lift the audience and keep the game improving for both women's and men's.
Absolutely. And then just back onto your teammates, sorry, just quickly, captain and manager?
I'd go Paul Robinson, captain, no doubt. Easy answer for me. I thought he was an absolutely fantastic captain on and off the pitch. Every time I played next to him, I looked round and you knew he had that bit between his teeth. And it was inspiring. And manager, I probably got a guy. It's a tough one between Gary, the both of Gary's really, but I think I'd go Gary Rowett, I think.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for that. Have we got the who now, Chris?
Yep, I think, Paul, I've got it lined up, if you want to explain to Morrow.
So, yeah, so Chris is going to play a player talking now that you played with for us, and literally just got to guess who it is.
Okay, here we go. Please work.
Yeah, you just have to look at last season where they finished and, you know, the playoff final. Unfortunately, they didn't go, obviously, Huddersfield
away. It's you.
I think, you know,
Chris Brown.
Yeah, who is it? It's me.
So, yeah, that was obviously
one job. All you've got.
And to play and
hope. Is a man of few words.
Oh, hang on. Let's try it again.
This just
one of Rose's friends.
When things like this go wrong, it just proves that we're live, doesn't it?
Just wait. Have a bit of patience, will you? Here we go. It ain't going to work. Okay, then forget
that.
Well,
it doesn't work, Chris. Shall we talk about the women?
Go on, then,
Craig.
So, disappointing result yesterday. Against what I will say was a very good and structured Southampton side. I mean, again, though, thanks to everybody that turned up. Just shy of 1,750 people there. So it was a good attendance down there, but took a good early lead. Fantastic. For the first 15, 20 minutes, the ladies' team were unplayable. They were absolutely superb. got the lead, and then unfortunately a couple of just lacks really in defence cost us. So mistake just before half time kind of took the wind out the sails a little bit, and then in the second half again we conceded a rather silly defensive goal. But you know, we lost the game 2-1. The thing that I take away from it all is the honesty of both Daz Carter and Jake Moore at the end of it, because they both said, we just simply on the day we're not good enough. Now, we're not out of the running. You know, still a few points behind the top of the table. There's only one position that goes up in this league. But we've got a game in hand against a Reading side that are struggling. So that's been rescheduled now. So hopefully we'll see that coming. And then some really important home games coming up with Blackburn being one of those in March. So it's a little bit of a break now for the internationals, but then we'll move on. We're still working to get Daz and some of the ladies on the show to talk about it. And hopefully we can do that ahead of that game against Blackburn. And also don't forget, you know, we get tickets through the show to go down. Every season ticket holder can go for free. So we've backed the lads, you know, and now I'd just like it to say, I know it's tough for people sometimes to do two games on the bounce, but if you can get down there, just even for one game, let's back the ladies and give them the support that they need to hopefully continue this Super League promotion push. And let's see how far we can go. But thanks for everybody that's been down. We had some really good feedback this weekend on a gentleman that took his son, right? He's not normally able to get down to games. So he had tickets via us, and his feedback was his son loved it. Now wants to go down with his niece to the next game, and his son and his sister wants to go as well. So it's more people attracted to the game. And obviously for those that can't normally make it, it's a great family day out. So yeah, let's see a few more people down there, and ahead of the next game, let's see what we can do.
Definitely. I think we're going to have one more. We're having more.
I think I've got it lined up now. Please God, here we go.
Yeah, you just have to look at last season where they finished, and you know, the playoff final. Unfortunately, it didn't go obviously Huddersfield's way, but I think, you know, this season you want to kick on again and try and get, you know, one better. So yeah, that was obviously the main thing for me, is to come here and to play, and hopefully, you know, we can kick on together.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Did you get that? Did you get that? Or do you want me to do it again?
Is that Conor Mahoney?
Wow. Straight away, yes.
Look. In fact, I think you've got to be the first person that's ever come on and got it straight away.
Yeah.
Hey, not headed too many balls, apparently. I've been all right.
Wow. That was impressive, yeah. Yeah.
You're the first one ever that's done that. Honestly, yeah. We always... Everyone usually struggles, don't they, every time?
I do, yeah.
We got Robert with Wes Thomas, and he was here for
80. I got Wes Thomas. Yeah, Connor.
So that ladies and gentlemen, was who? That's all over and done with quickly, wasn't it?
There we go.
Sorry, Paul.
You know, Michael, you know the goal you did score? You know, the Messi-like goal? Was that sort of planned, or was it... Yeah, the longer you went on, it sort of happened by accident. Or did
it
you
definitely
plan it?
It definitely wasn't planned. No, I sort of before that goal, I dribbled it over to the left and got caught in, got the ball nicked off me. So I was like, I don't want to go too wide this time. I'm going to cut back inside. And then before I knew it, I was running past another player, and then I was in the box, and then I was like, oh, I'm going to knock it in the corner now. So no, it definitely weren't planned. I think if I planned it, I'd have probably messed it up.
Yeah. was Steve Cottrell Shrewsbury's manager then as well?
Unfortunately not, no.
Okay.
That made it better.
Yeah, we've actually got footage, haven't we, Chris? I don't want to throw you under the bus again if you don't work like.
No, here we go. It's getting there. There's no sound, but I'm gonna show it here we go. It's playing. It is this bit is in slow motion as well, because it makes it look even better.
So he picks it up just inside his own just inside their half.
Here you go. Whoa!
Unbelievable goal.
That's a cracker. That's a cracker.
Brilliant.
Excellent. There you go.
Yeah. Mauro Donna. I've been called that, yeah?
Yeah. There'll be loads of Argentinians wearing Cambridge tops.
Tomorrow, you've mentioned Lyle Taylor. Obviously, loved his time when he was on loan at Birmingham. A lot of people say you should never fall in love with a loanee, but he was one person that we all adored just because of, you know, not just his ability to score, but his charisma. How did you find him at Cambridge? Because I know he's a type of person that some people have described him as Marmite. You either love him or you hate him. But what's your thoughts around Lyle? Because, like I say, I loved him.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a real strong connection with our fans straight away. He wears his heart on his sleeve, says it how it is, and I think people appreciate that. He's quite articulate in the way that he speaks as well. So, yeah, I think he's really good at bringing the team and the fans together. He's done that really well in the short period of time he's been there. And I can understand why some places it hasn't worked for him and some places it has. I think he feels most comfortable as the main man, and I think we've been able to facilitate that for him within our team. And, you know, he struggled a little bit at Wickham for game time. You can see why possibly it's not worked out for him there. And, you know, if he's not the main man, I think it can be difficult for him. But he's a really nice guy, and he's got a lot to say for himself all the time, bubbly character, so it's nice that he's in a positive mood. So yeah, I can see why people have said that, but I've only seen the good side of him.
Just love his penalty. He, the way he comes up to take a penalty, it will never ever change, and it's just so, well, sneaky is the wrong way to use it, but just the way that he completely faults the goalkeepers with that little run up, he's just brilliant.
Yeah, I've seen it before, obviously I've watched it, but I've never had it in my team, so I don't know if I'll be so relaxed when I'm watching him do it this time. Hopefully he hasn't lost that touch.
It's a bit like Ivan Toney, isn't he, the way he takes them, similar
yeah, walks up with no I haven't actually seen him practice them that many, because you thought like, oh, maybe you've got to practice them, but I haven't seen him since he's been in. He's not really practiced them, so it must just be one of them things that he's got the knack of. Well, I hope he has anyway.
Definitely. Keep your questions coming in for tomorrow, by the way. We will read them out. And we've got our live show next week as well, haven't we, Chris?
Oh, yeah. Still tickets available. I'm looking forward to that. It's a bit of an experiment to see how it goes. And if it does go well, then, you know, maybe we'll take it on the road. Who knows?
Let's hope everything works, eh?
Yeah. Everything's going to work, yeah. No, it'll all work. Don't worry.
But give us I know you said your memory's bad, Morrow, of your games with Blues, but what would you say would be your sort of top three games up when you was at Blues in the 5 years? If you had to pick three games that you could go back and relive, what would they be and why?
Watford at home, that was my first home game. Definitely that one, without a doubt. Bristol City away when we stayed up. That was a mad day. Unbelievable pressure. Actually, you know, I'd been injured that season. For a long time, so you know, I only played the last two or three games, and I think we beat Huddersfield against the odds. There was a lot going on in that game, and then obviously to go and beat Bristol City, you know, that was an amazing feeling of relief. So they're the big two that stick out. And then we beat Reading once 5-1. I think Damari Gray scored two or three in that game. It was, you know, it was one of the best performances from a team.
Chris actually would have been naked because it was 6-1.
Oh, 6. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought I was it. Yeah, 6-1.
Damn. Mike Donaldson got a hat trick, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. And then we played Forest once. We beat them 3-1 around Christmas time. We got beat heavily against Derby, and Gary picked the same team. And I think that was quite brave of him to do that. And we went and repaid him and won 3-1 at the City Ground. That was another good day for me as well. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, definitely. A brilliant question from Pete Taylor here. Ask Morrow who would win in a boxing match between Juki and Cech Endoy.
Cool, that'd be a good one, wouldn't it?
It would
that'd be a good one.
I'd pay for that.
Cool. I'm going to have to go Cech Endoy. I just would not want to be in a fight with him. No. So I just couldn't imagine him stopping. Juki's a nice guy deep down. And Cech, I think, would be ruthless.
Ray Hobro, question for Morrow. As a professional footballer, what do you think of VAR?
I think they've got it right. Premier League does that, EFL doesn't. And I think that's what makes it, separates it. That's what makes the EFL product much better. That's why people like going to the Championship. The one thing I've not done is gone to a Premier League game and watched and been at the stadium when they're doing VAR. You know, you sit and watch at home, you know what's going on. I think it must be so frustrating as a fan when you're at the stadium with all the stoppage going on and not knowing what's happening, where I think the purity of it in the Championship, in the EFL, League One, League Two, is why people like going to that games rather than, you know, all right, we've got to stop and blah, blah, blah. I can see its place, and there's nothing more frustrating as a player when it's an obvious handball or the referee's made an obvious mistake. But I prefer without it.
Maybe one day
we'll
experience it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Claire. I think Lily Pads sent something through. Do you want to read it out for Maura?
So this is from Lilypad. He was our M&M, our centre-back. He loved to sing. He loved to laugh. He's a legend. He was a blue. And although he left, he's still a super dude. For our M&M is on the box. Our TTS, he'll never be forgot. For he's one in a million, a role model to all. Good luck in your career. Your love of football. Keep right on.
Thank you very much.
It's good.
She's also asking who had the worst dress sense at Blues.
That's a tough one. Ryan Shotton used to wear some stuff that I would never wear. It probably was more fashionable to me, but Ryan, I remember Ryan Shotton spending a bit of money on some stuff that I was thinking, oh, I'm not sure about that.
Ian Clayton, if Blues went down against Bristol City, sorry, it's gone off my screen. If Blues went down against Bristol City, how bad would it have been financially at the time for the club?
I can't really answer that one. It's just one of them things that you don't really know. You know, as a player, you never really, or, you know, certainly when I was at Birmingham, you never realised what was going on, what was happening, how bad it was. You know, when we had the point deduction, we didn't know what was happening. And I think often fans think that we find out stuff before they do. You know, I've had managers sacked and my friends have texted me and said, oh, I see your manager's been sacked. You know, we're not always notified before to tell us, all right, this is coming out, and it's not as managed as well as what I think fans think. You know, sometimes we find out after fans when managers have been sacked or rules have been changed, you know, in terms of the points deductions and stuff like that. And that's not just at Birmingham. You know, when I was at Reading, I mean, it's not a very good example. I had points deducted the following, you know, 2 years later or the following season there as well. So, you know, it is harder than it seems to run these football clubs right and get them moving in the right direction. And you know, it looks like the owners now are doing that. You know, there's a lot of work going in around the city as well, which is really important, and you know, hopefully we're building something new.
Yeah, it must be horrible, because obviously I've seen you play many games and you wear your heart on your sleeve and you run through a brick wall for your team, and when you're doing that week in, week out and working your watsits off for your club, it must be so frustrating when you just, you know, it's completely out of your control and you get 9 points deducted off you, or you know, moving on further into your Reading time, you get points taken off you there as well for all the work and effort that you put in. It must be really frustrating.
Yeah, I think probably the most frustrating time was when they sacked Gary, because I think, you know, it's easy to say now, but I think it was really frustrating, because I think we'd built on progression of what we had. We knew what we were as a team. We knew where we needed to go. I think he had a clear plan of what he wanted to recruit in the January, and you know, and obviously he didn't get that time, and it would have been really interesting to see how he would have progressed the team. You know, maybe it hadn't worked, but I think that's the one moment when you think, oh, why have they done that? Like, that could have been something special. Maybe it wouldn't have been, but at the time it felt like something was coming along like that. You know, we'd just beat Ipswich and we were in the, you know, just off the playoffs or in the playoffs. And I think that's the one that frustrates you. And then obviously with a points deduction, you know, fortunately we didn't get relegated, but as a player you're thinking, you know, I could end up with a relegation on my CV here for nothing, you know, when it's not my fault, like the club have, you know, not have worked right, we've got 9-10 points deducted and you've ended up having a relegation on your CV, and you don't know what that can happen entirely in your career, you know.
No,
that's the question.
Pushka?
Yeah.
So I was there when we lost 5-0 against Brentford away, which was Steve Cottrell. And I was also there when we lost against Rotherham in the Zola era. What was it like as a player listening to fans wanting the manager out?
Yeah, it's difficult as well, because, you know, it depends your situation as players. Certain players, you know, aren't in the team, so they probably go, well, yeah, I want to see the player out. Certain players are in the team and thinking, well, we're going about it the wrong way, I'd like to see the manager out. And then there's other players going, well, he's picking me every week, I like what he's doing, I want him to stay. So, you know, from a mindset point of view, everybody's individual, and that's half the issue at the time. You want everybody to be aligned on the same page, and that's the prerogative of the manager and of the football team to align everybody together. So, you know, when there are a few people that might be happy that a manager's changing, you're probably not doing your job as well as you'd like. So it can be difficult. And it is difficult if you're following a plan that you don't believe in. But as professionals, you want to play every game. So you follow what you're told because you want to be a good teammate and you want to play every week. That's the be all and end all for players who want to play. Certainly for me, I want to play in games and you want to help everybody. But yeah, it can be difficult. Normally when people are asking for the managers to get sacked, the players aren't playing very well themselves. So you're looking at yourself as well, thinking, well, I need to perform here, because it's, manager can set you up a certain way, can say whatever, but as a player, you feel responsible for it yourself. If somebody's asking for the manager to leave, chances are you've not been winning games. And as a defender, you've probably been at fault for some of them goals or some of them mistakes.
Can I ask you a question there, Michael? I asked this of Robbo, and he kind of fudged the answer. But as a, you must have in your time as a professional had many managers come through the door. Have you, be honest, have you ever seen a manager come through the door and thinking, "Oh my God, no, this is not going to be, this is not good"?
No, I think it takes a little bit of time for that to happen, when you're thinking, actually, I'm not sure he's got the right grasp of what the team's doing or what the team is. I think you know, the new manager comes in and he comes in with a blank, everybody, you hear him say, I'm not judging anyone from what happened before. So you're on a level playing field. And I think, honestly, managers do believe in that. And I think as a player, you're ready to listen to what the new manager's got to say. I don't think straight away right, this isn't working. But there can be a time after a little while you're thinking, I'm not sure that's the right way to treat people. And sometimes it's, I'm not sure that's the right tactic. As a player, as a person, you're more offended with the way that manager might treat people rather than the tactics that he chooses. And that's just me personally.
Robbo kind of said, well, I'm not a sulker, and whatever I think of the bloke that's coming through the door, I'm gonna be as professional and do my job, and that's it. I accepted that, but I thought to myself, that's tough. That's a tough way. If you are lugheads with the manager, it's tough to not sulk if you're allowed.
I don't think it's. I wouldn't say it was sulking, but there's definitely people you prefer to play for than not. Or you feel you've got a relationship with, and they feel the trust goes both ways. I think that's just natural. It's not that you're not trying any harder for somebody; just other people are a good fit for you or good motivation for you. In all walks of life, everyone has a manager they might like or might not like. Doesn't mean that you don't act professional and do your best. It's just sometimes you prefer to play for other people. You feel like you're getting treated more with more responsibility. You might have more ownership on the team, and that comes into it,
Yeah,
definitely. Robe, was you going to come in, mate? Was you going to say
something? Yeah, sorry. I was just going to ask Michael. Going back to when Gary Rowett was sacked, how was that broken to you as a group? Was it himself calling together, or was it somebody from the club? How did you find out?
We were in on a cool down. I think it was a Tuesday. I think it must have been a Tuesday game. And then on the Wednesday, we were in for cool down anyway. And then there was a meeting that had got pulled that shouldn't have been pulled. It's right where there's a meeting. So we didn't know what was going on. And at the time, actually, there was a lot to do with some of the paedophile stuff that had gone on in football. And we thought that, maybe it was a meeting about that or something more generalised than that. And then Gary kind of walked in and was like, listen, guys, I've been sacked. And everyone was like, what? Can't believe this. Lots of completely out of the blue. There was no murmur. Normally you'd know something. Ended up Gary getting the sack. And that's how we got told. And we were actually having a partner's Christmas party with our partners in that evening. So everybody was together in the evening. And I remember going over to the Radisson to meet Panos with Robbo. And Panos sort of saying, listen, we've done this, but there's still a plan. We're going to get a new manager as soon as possible. We'll be in before the weekend, blah, blah, blah. Trust us. And that's how it got planned. And then we relayed that to the team at the party, or wasn't really a party because everybody was sort of just there to find out what was happening. And then Zola came in on the Thursday or the Friday, or it might have even been announced later on that evening. I can't quite remember the time frame, but yeah, it was very much very abrupt. and Gary just came into the room and told everyone, and it was a big shock.
Yeah. I remember a meeting, I'd just come out and my phone, I must have had about sort of 15 text messages, and I was going on air, and I'd been in the meeting for about 45 minutes. But yeah, I just couldn't believe it. It was just so surreal, wasn't it, when it happened? Mark Meredith, yeah, you? Tell us your, where was you when you found out Rowett was sacked, and how shocked was you?
I can't even remember where I would have been. I'd probably been on the fields myself, but yeah, it was a shock for everybody, I think. You know, I loved Rowett. I would have watched him play for Blues, and then obviously as a manager as well. And again, like this morning, obviously I'm 6 hours behind you guys, so I woke up this morning to 35 messages about Tony Mowbray, so I know the feeling of just getting messages on your phone. But yeah, it was a clear shock for everybody involved in the club, I think, that day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And obviously we're coming to the last 5 minutes or so, but is there any squad sort of dressing room around, like, the training ground? Any, I know Robbo's obviously a prankster, but any other good pranksters and any good stories you can tell us about? Any funny pranks or jokes that you used to play on each other or anything like that you can tell us about? Any funny stories?
I could probably share one about Zola when he first came in. He was asking me, you know, do you think it's going to work out with managers? And we played Brighton on the Saturday, and he was going through the team, and he started talking about Brighton's team, bearing in mind they were the best team in the league, and Sam Baldock had scored the most goals that league. He was the hot striker at the time, and Zola was doing his thing, you know, talking about these players, and he was like, Sam Bollocks, we've got to watch out for him. Sam Bollocks is this. And then straight away, people were going, oh, I'm not quite sure this is going to work in his first place. Sam pulled up Sam Bollocks. So sometimes there's some red flags that pop up, yeah.
Brilliant. So predictions for Saturday then, Ipswich away.
Oh, dear.
Chris, do you want to start us off?
Ipswich away? I think we're on a roll. You know what? I'll go for a sneaky 1-0 win.
Oh, that'd be good. Craig?
I think a very, very, very tough and regimented Ipswich side. So I'll go for 1-1. I think we'll get a result, but it's going to be tough.
Claire?
I hope we get something, because it takes 3 hours to get there. So
yeah, it's horrible.
I'm hoping. I've got, you know, I think I'll take a draw right now if you gave it to me. 1-1.
Yep. Mark Meredith?
It's a tough one. I think we'll get beat 1-0, but obviously my heart wants... I'll take a draw as well. I'd take a 1-1 draw, but I do think in my head a 1-0 defeat.
Mm. Alan?
Well, Ipswich have been my mystery team all year. I cannot understand. I've seen highlights. I've seen them live. I cannot understand why they are where they are. And they're slipping. Mm. And I think we might take advantage of that with a close win, 2-1 or something. And I've been telling everybody since the season started, and Ipswich won, I don't know, 10 games under Tuss or whatever it was, that they wouldn't get promoted. And I'm trusting my boys to stick another nail in their coffin.
That'd be very good. Yeah. Mark Adams?
You know what? I'm going to go for a sneaky 2-1 as well. I think it'll be another win against one of Tony's old teams. So I'm going to go 2-1 as well. Mm. You know,
yeah.
You know, if Meso can do it, we can.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Morrow, what do you reckon, mate?
Well, I feel really bad here, because I'm going to go 2-1 Ipswich. I've seen a lot of Ipswich, and I actually think they're really good. I think they're really strong with Kiefer Moore up front now. I think they recruited really well in January, and him, he's somebody that I really like. Seen them play a lot. They played against us last year. Everybody is fine-tuned to what they're doing, even the ones that come in off the bench. And yeah, I think Ipswich, they beat Millwall quite comfortably the other day as well. And yeah, I think I still think they're on a good run. I still think they're getting in the playoffs. I fancy them 2-1.
I'll go for a Desmond 2-2.
Sat on the fence there, look. At least I didn't sit on the fence in the draw.
I went to Ipswich away under for Harry's first game when he first took over permanently. Yeah, you
I went to that one.
Yeah, you were planning that, Morrow. We lost 1-0, I think, didn't we?
Yeah,
yeah. Claire, are you going?
Yeah, of course I am.
Gosh, the daft question, ain't? They wouldn't kick off if you weren't there now, would they?
No, I did. Yeah, but you gotta love it, don't you, at the end of the day. We should, hopefully it'll be a good day. It's just when you travel all that way and you don't get anything, so let's hope. And hopefully we've built a bit of momentum as well. Hopefully they're worried about us, which is what we want teams to be. So We'll see everybody there and see what happens.
And hopefully, you know, with Tony not being there on the day, you know, hopefully the lads can go and do it for him as well, you know. And I know that he'll get to speak to them remotely and stuff, but, you know, won't be on the touchline, will he, and stuff. So hopefully that'll, you know, I mean, they don't need it. They've been doing really well lately, the last couple of games. Just carry on what they're doing. And the better the opposition gets, he even said this, didn't he, in his interview after the game on Saturday. And I love what he said. He just said, they're only footballers. Don't worry about it. Just go out there and do your job and just try and do what you're doing better than them. And, you know, we're trying to play on the front foot. And what I do like as well is when we're in the box and we're attacking the opposition, you know, it's like pinball now, isn't it? We've got three or four players in the box every time we attack, and we look like every goal we've scored has been quite scrappy, if you like. But who cares? It doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah, we weren't capable of scoring those sort of goals because we never had enough bodies around. That's right. And now we've had two occasions where, you know, as you say, it's pinballed around. And eventually it's fell at one of our feet and it's been stuck away.
Yeah.
Whereas before the thing would have gone ding dong ding and then cleared. And
exactly.
We're nowhere near getting shots in on goal.
No, that's right.
What's that? Is it a party?
So I think that means it's full time, ladies and gentlemen. So we've been the Tilt and Talk show. Thanks for watching tonight. And I've been Paul Hipkiss, and it's good night from me, and it's good night from Claire Gibley.
It's good night from me, good night from Chris Brown.
And it's good night from me, and it's good night from Alan Watton.
And it's good night from me, and it's good night from my good friend, The Rope.
Good night from me, and it's good night from my bully, Craig Courtney.
Saving the best till last, but no, it's good night from me, and finally, I'll hand over to Michael Morrison himself.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me. KRLA.
Yeah, thanks for your time, mate. It's much appreciated.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for turning up in America.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Well done, Mark Meredith.
Good night from Rolf Meredith. Good night from Rolf Meredith as well.
I'm getting paid a lot to wear this gear. Don't worry about that.
Who you got, Sandy, Michael?
Bolton tomorrow. Bolton tomorrow, and we play Peterborough at home, which is a big derby for us.
Oh, okay.
Big game.
Good looking them two games.
Yeah, indeed.
You're gonna score in one of them two games.
I hope it's the Peterborough one, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Rope, have you got any friends yet?
Michael, you'd be my mate, wouldn't you?
Down a bar for a pie, wouldn't we?
Michael, if you score this season, can you do that as your celebration?
Oh, yeah, please.
Please. Yeah. We will be watching.
He's got to score now, that's the hard part.
He's just
going to
go up to
him
and go.
Or if Cambridge United sell robes in their club shop, buy one and then put it on when you score.
Please.
Oh, Rob, you feel special now. Are you mopping out tonight?
Flopping out soon.
And a reminder, this podcast is available every Tuesday from midday onwards on all the major platforms, including Spotify, Apple, YouTube, Deezer, and Amazon, as well as many more. If you've enjoyed this podcast, let us know. Maybe you haven't. Still let us know. Cheers. The Tilt and Talk Show.